Hola, bienvenidos a Spanish with Carrie podcast. In this podcast, you'll learn more than the language itself. You'll learn efficient and effective ways to practice so that you can reach your unique goals with Spanish. All this coming to you from somebody who became bilingual while not living in a Spanish-speaking country. Spanish is one of my passions, and teaching is my calling. And I look forward to learning with you. Let's get into it.
Se baila así, se goza más. Se baila así, se goza más. Se baila así, el ritmo de Puerto Rico. Se goza más, es el que me gusta más. Se baila así, oye de aquí para allá.
Hello and welcome. Espero que estén bien, cuidándose. I'm very excited about today's episode. The second time I'll have a guest on the podcast, and it's going to be a fantastic conversation, I have no doubt. I think that this episode is really going to resonate, especially with people who have grown up in Spanish-speaking households in the United States, or people that are a little bit further along in the process, because we're going to be really talking about the human side of the experience, the part about connecting, a little bit less about the nuts and bolts, the grammar, vocab, and more about what it really feels like to be in the process when you have a bit more of a grasp on the language and are then trying to establish yourself socially in the language, finding your place. So I am so excited to welcome Annette Toro, who is a student and friend of mine and just a gem of a human being. Let's start. Annette, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, of course. So let's start off with, you know, we have a number of topics that we're going to hit on today. But of course, since this is a podcast about learning Spanish, tell us about your connection to Spanish.
Okay, so as Carrie said, my name is Annette Toro. Starting off saying Toro, I think that's a great sort of explanation of where my Spanish is. Both my sides of my family are from Puerto Rico. I grew up in a pretty affluent white neighborhood, learned pretty early on that it was not acceptable to speak Spanish in that neighborhood. And so over the years, I lost a lot of the language and have been sort of on a journey back since Hurricane Maria.
Excellent. And I know that, you know, something that I think is, you know, really struck me learning about your journey too, is that you used to spend your summers here growing up.
Yes, I did. And I stopped about college, like everybody does, because you get busy, whatever. So I had no real reason to practice it in a real way on a daily basis. And so I would say the majority of the loss happened like after 18. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I ended up, or I went to visit every summer, probably since before I can remember.
Wow. And it's, I mean, I think that's a good point too. You know, of course, the question that I get all the time here is, you know, ¿dónde aprendiste español? You know, ¿por qué Puerto Rico? Those sort of things. And for me, it was like, you know, this has been a part of my life for so long. It was my major in college. But after college, I really wasn't using it. I mean, even though I was still kind of involved peripherally because it was part of my work, I wasn't actually speaking and listening, using it actively in that way, and lost so much of it. And it was a point of really, you know, decisive moment for me when it was like, I can't maintain a conversation at all in this language, right, that I've studied for so long, that I love, that, you know, I have a freaking degree in. And it really speaks to, I mean, I mention all the time here on the importance of consistency, that people will ask for, you know, what's the best way to learn? What's the quickest way to learn? What's the best app to use? And there is nothing more important than consistency, because anything that our brain's not using regularly, it will not hold on to. And so even if it was part of a language that you had since you were a little kid and you've never had to think about the rules or the grammar, maybe some stuff that people that are learning it as an adult have had to think about, it was so, you know, part of what you spoke naturally, when we don't use it, we lose it. Cliche, but right, true. So, you know, what happened with after, talk a little bit about maybe your experience after Maria and what, Huracán María, which for maybe those who aren't as familiar with what's, you know, the ups, the ups and downs of Puerto Rico, the Hurricane Maria that happened in September of 2017, that completely devastated the island, and many people were without electricity and water for some for maybe 3 months, some for almost a year. I mean, and I think there's places that are still sort of dependent on generators in some of the more rural parts of the island just because of the damage and sort of lack of infrastructure with the electric system and, you know, and the grid. So after Maria, what was your sort of the feeling, the why that brought you back?
Right. So after the hurricane, like every person who's Puerto Rican and in the States, I was like, what can I do? There's something that I need to do. I can't just sit here and watch it, especially because the US government failed the island so much. Mm-hmm. So I ended up fundraising and collecting all these water filters, et cetera, to bring back to Puerto Rico. And I noticed when I went back that I was able to understand everything everyone was saying to me. I was able to like absorb their feelings, but I wasn't able to give them back the emotional weight of their feelings in the same way that I would be able to in English. And it was so heartbreaking to me that this was like the place that I loved most in the world, this language that I also really love, and this inability to communicate and, as we've spoken about before, like add value to the conversation and to really communicate that I grasped the gravity of the situation and that I loved these people and that everyone in the States who loves Puerto Rico was doing everything they possibly could to make up for the United States failures.
Exactly. And to sort of compensate this feeling of de ser impotente, of just being so powerless.
Right.
In that moment. Absolutely. I think, you know, when you said that, I thought about when I decided to pick it back up on my own, and I found some language partners that turned into friendships, real genuine friendships. And at one point with one of my friends, she was telling me about a situation that happened to her just recently. And I wasn't able in that moment to really to do the same thing as exactly what you're saying. I wasn't able to empathize. I wasn't able to say like that I understand or that I hear her. And I remember that after that conversation, I was like, never again will I not be able to express empathy for somebody. And so I went to another close friend of mine and asked her, like, what is some of the vocab that can express something like, oh my, I feel that, and my heart goes out to you, whatever the kind of words that we use that feel so genuine when they're coming from ourselves. We know that when someone that we really care about is going through something difficult, we're not just going to be like, I'm sorry. You know, there's more that we want to say and that we want to speak to acknowledge their experience. And those subtleties, that's what Annette and I are really, you know, that we talk about a lot and that we're both in right now in the language is how do I express emotions? Something I talked about a couple episodes ago. that goes way beyond just saying that you're fluent, is how do I connect? How do I echo your feelings to you? How do I show you that I authentically care when we feel that so much of the way that we do that is through our words, the words we choose very carefully to use. And you mentioned something there that we were going to talk about, I think that we both felt like was a real aha moment for both of us, which is the feeling of contributing value. Something that is such a beautiful part of the human existence is finding those types of friendships, those connections where you know that you sit down and the conversation is just one of you contributing value to that person, even though you're not sitting there thinking of like, what's the way I can be valuable right now? It's just you coming, speaking your truth, speaking authentically, that really means something to the other person. And that's where the struggle where you and I find ourselves. What is this struggle? We both speak the language, right? But what is the next level?
And I found, and maybe you'll relate to this too, because you knew more and then lost some of it. Mm-hmm. I found that the feeling of knowing Spanish and having it somewhere in your brain, like it's locked in a chest and not being able to access it is even more frustrating than what I would imagine just not knowing a language to be, to know there is somewhere inside of me in which I can absolutely connect with you.
Right.
But but I've not done the work to keep it up, or, you know, my anxiety, for me, it's very, very tied to identity. It's very, very tied to like my worth and value as someone who's Puerto Rican, right? Like this is who I, if I can't communicate, what does that say about how much I care about my culture? What does that say about me as a human being? Right. Like, what does it say about the way the diaspora as a whole treats coming from Puerto Rico and assimilating into the society in the US?
Right.
So it's not just this like interpersonal, like, what does it mean to give value in a conversation? It's also like, what does this mean about me? Where do I belong? What is my identity?
Exactly.
Which is can be really paralyzing in a conversation to feel like, not just am I like anxious about adding value, I'm anxious about being my authentic self as me and being my authentic self as a woman who's Puerto Rican.
Exactly. And I think, you know, TikTok is a platform that really, I see this conversation more, and I mean, sure, it's because I also create content in Spanish, right? That I ended up, algorithm wise, I see this, but I've seen so many videos about this same question or this same asunto, that not being able to quite claim your identity as a Latino or Latina, for lack of the language, and people that have, you know, which was saying that at the beginning, that people who have grown up in Spanish speaking households but always respond back in English, then they have that, this insecurity of not really being, from them personally, not feeling totally identified with the culture, but also that that is reflected from other people back to them too, that they feel like other people treat them like, you're not really Mexican, you're not really this because you can't speak the language. So I, you know, I, of course, I don't have that experience personally, but I can imagine how challenging anything gets hard enough without that layer to just figure out where we are in the world and say, this is who I am, you know?
Yeah, it's all very complicated, and identity is always complicated. But, you know, you walk into, for me, I walked into my elementary school, someone heard me speak Spanish, and then they put me in speech therapy because they were worried about me speaking Spanish, right? Oh my gosh. Immediately I'm like 5-6 years old and I'm like, this is not okay.
Exactly.
And so you tell yourself the story, this is not okay, this is not okay, don't be this person, fit in, blend in, whether you know you're doing it or not, especially as a young, young child.
Yep.
And then the older you get, you stop realizing that you've internalized that completely, and you're just doing it unconsciously now. You're not giving yourself to the language anymore. You're not trying at all, because now it's just normal to not try, right?
Exactly.
It's all very, very, very complicated.
Yeah. So what would, you know, something that, you know, with the idea of maybe many people identifying with this experience, what are maybe some words or advice or some of the mental game that we have to go through in order to get back into it, in order to say, okay, this is something, you know, and I have my own thoughts because, you know, coming from me getting back into it and my own why, but for other people that feel this sort of lack of identity or this real insecurity, maybe about trying to get back into it, what are some things you could, you know, speak to from your own experience?
I mean, I think I would say the first thing is that, like, you have to divorce the idea of language as the only way of participating in your culture.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, it leaves you more open to be able to learn the language, because it's no longer steeped in this like idea of like, if I don't get this word right, then I'm a bad Puerto Rican.
Right. Right.
But like, language is vitally important, right? But so is food. So are stories. So are relationships. So so is the island and its nature, right? Like, there's a million ways you can participate.
Right.
In the what experience it is to be Puerto Rican. Yeah.
Right. The experience of how you grew up, you know, your parents, the family dynamic. Right. I mean, that's very much part of your identity as well.
Right. So I just hope that someone who is like listening to this, who has known the internal battle of like, who am I? Where do I belong? Who's my community? Like, can I claim this identity? Mm-hmm. Even things like, how do I acknowledge my privilege as for me, as a woman who walks the world through the world as mostly unclockable as Bertha Figueroa, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people aren't going to look at me and immediately assume that.
Right.
There's so many facets of this idea of identity in Puerto Rican culture, but really in any culture, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if we can just like embrace our culture as it is in our homes, the uniqueness of our own particular experience without judging it, without trying to make it something that it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
The work of learning the language becomes like joyful connection instead of this thing steeped in anxiety.
Absolutely.
And lack of connection, really, because if you're wondering like what your identity is, identity tied to connection. Like that's how we connect with each other, is like, you're living in Puerto Rico. I went to Puerto Rico every summer, right? Like that's how we connect as human beings, is to have those commonalities.
Exactly.
So if you can just accept your experience as what it is, rather than wishing that it was something that it wasn't, I think that's a great place to start to get back into the language, and just do your best to not judge yourself. And I say that as someone who judges themselves very harshly.
Always easier to say than to practice, right? But you touched on something that I want to mention, because what I acknowledge here often, what I acknowledge with my students, is that like I've learned one language, and it's been a very long process for me, versus people who are, you know, creating content on the internet, who have studied this for so long, who know 8 languages, who have put themselves through the language learning process so many times that they have such wisdom and gold that they can share with us. And so I refer to them a lot as trying to, in my teaching process, about what are really some best practices. And, you know, this one guy is very, very much recognized in the field of language acquisition. His name is Stephen Craffin. And I saw an interview with him once that was, I learned so, so much from this. And he talked about, you know, his experience as a English as a second language teacher. And he had a Japanese family move into his building. I think he was in New York at the time. And, you know, the daughter didn't speak English. She was very young, like younger than 4 years old or so, but didn't speak any English. And he was like, okay, me as this English as a second language teacher and a leading researcher in this field, like I'm going to help her learn English. And it really did not go quite as he planned. And that taught him so much more along in the process. But something that he pointed out that's incredibly important to people in order for the language to come out is a lack of pressure, or a lack of really sort of any negative emotions, being pushed into it, being forced into it, some sort of expectations, that really blocks the language learning process. And so fascinating to me, how much emotions play into our ability to get words out or to allow input to come in, right? Because I've seen it with people that I've had consultations with, if they have a negative feeling towards the language, they don't love the culture, they're doing this because they need to, they have such a hard time picking up the language. And so I think it's beautiful what you say about, you know, letting go of this sort of forcing the language, and instead to experience this as something you enjoy doing. I mean, I've mentioned this over and over again, but it's like, until you enjoy the process, until you enjoy learning, you won't learn the language. You have to fall in love with the process of new words and that slightly like hard hit to the ego moment where people say, do you know what this means? And you're like, no. Do you know what this means? Have you heard this phrase? Happens to me all the time, friends. And if you take that personally and you're like, oh my God, I feel so fucking dumb, I'm tired of people always having to explain the jokes to me, then you will shut yourself off from the language. So the attitude, the openness, and the curiosity being a huge piece of success for those who want to reconnect with it.
Yeah, it is. Is a really difficult shift to make, especially because, at least, you know, in the culture we're talking about in Puerto Rico, it's such a culture of connection and family, and to feel like you've somehow failed your people
right.
by by not learning is so loaded.
Yes.
It's so loaded.
Yeah.
How do you, I mean, like the number of times I've cried in lessons with Carrie is not something I love to admit, but it's just the way it is, right? Like there's so much tied to it. So yeah. Any little bit you can do to divorce, like, the need to succeed,
right,
and the failure of feeling stupid or wrong or small,
right,
and just be like, I'm going to feel dumb sometimes. I'm going to feel like I don't know what I'm saying.
Yep.
I'm going to feel a little lost sometimes. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to not know every word.
Yep.
And you're doing your best. And truthfully, most people who are engaging in conversation with you are so grateful that you are trying it all, right? That,
exactly,
that you haven't given up altogether. So it's really just a journey of being gentle with yourself, which,
right,
I'm not great at.
Right. It's a moment by moment. I mean, and the of course, I think we can all sit down and think about that and recognize that that's what it takes. But it's like in the moment, being able to release that feeling and acknowledge that it's there and release it, and acknowledge that it's there and release it, or separate yourself a little bit from it so that you can keep going, you know. And it's, and I did a live video about nervousness when you're speaking, and to acknowledge that you're nervous, but to also take a breath and let that be a little bit on the side platter. That could be, okay, I understand that there's,
right,
nervousness here, but that's not who's steering the car right now. I can also take a breath and stand on my own and be okay. So the,
sure,
same thing can happen with, you know, a sort of a feeling of, oh my gosh, you know, all of the emotional charge that comes with maybe feeling like you're failing, or the extra, how personal it gets when it's, you know, coming from your identity, your culture, your family, and being able to, yep, be gentle with yourself and say, okay, I recognize that that's here, but I'm going to keep going forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. So we have sort of a part two of our conversation. We're going to start moving into Annette's company, her business. But before we go there, anything else that, you know, sort of closing thoughts on the process with the language?
Closing thoughts on the process. I would say something that I very purposefully did that might help other people and it might not. For me, it was really helpful to find someone who wasn't a native. And the reason I did that was to divorce sort of some of the emotion from,
mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm,
to be like, if I mess up, this person is not like a native culture who's, mm-hmm, going to feel some type of way about it.
Yep.
And, you know, most teachers are not going to, but it doesn't really make a difference sometimes in your mind what they're feeling, because you've decided, exactly, in your mind what they're feeling.
Yep.
So I would just say, like, really be introspective about what it is that you need to learn, mm-hmm, the language.
Yep.
And sometimes that's something that you might not totally expect or think of at first.
Yep. Great point. And that's something, you know, it's like I tell my students over and over again that I don't teach Spanish because my Spanish is perfect. No, I make mistakes all the time. I'm still slow. But I teach Spanish because I've gone through everything that you've gone through. And so when you're sitting there in a lesson and you feel so freaking slow, sacando palabras, like that's the reality of the process, that you're slow for a long time. It's like, I know how sweet it feels to have somebody be patient with you. And because the reality is that in order to get quicker, you have to put yourself through that process of finding the word and doing that over and over and over and over again. And so I don't mind, like, I'll sit here all day and allow you that space to do that, because I know that that's what it takes. And I know how sweet it feels when I feel that someone's being patient with me. It's a really hard feeling to realize that you're losing people's attention, that people are, like, you know, not wanting to engage in conversation with you because they see your slowness. And so I'm like, let me be the person that is completely the opposite. I will sit here and wait all day for you to tell me three sentences. I'm fine with that, you know, and that's,
right,
you know, so that's sort of the perspective I try to bring into lessons. So thank you. And of course, I'm so damn happy that you found me, because
Aww.
Huge blessing in my life.
Aww. Back at you.
All right, sweet. So tell us about Whole Hoops, your company and its mission. And it's just like, these are now like my favorite freaking pair of earrings. And I think there's a lot besides the actual look of them. There's a lot of heart layered into that too. So tell us a little bit about Whole Hoops.
Sure. So I'm a big crafter. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a graduate student for arts administration. So I always sort of like have my hand in some sort of like crafty or artistic thing. I have a background in singing and playing guitar, but whenever there's something that like really captures my emotions, my attention, mm-hmm. I have made a craft and sold it and donated that money. That has been like a consistent thing I've done over the years. Okay. So that happened again around the George Floyd protests. And this time it was earrings. And so after I did it, I just realized that I really loved hoops themselves. I felt like they really made people feel empowered and whole, mm-hmm. and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I also was really passionate about fundraising and mutual aid and how do we care for our communities. Mm-hmm. And being able to sort of like marry our individual power through the earrings and our collective power through donating, mm-hmm. Was something that really like captured my excitement. Yeah. And then beyond that, I have Crohn's disease. And so I've found it difficult to be in workspaces that don't really allow for the space to meet your own needs, and therefore don't allow for the space to meet the needs of your community as well, because you're burnt out. Mm-hmm. So I was really passionate about creating something in which I could both meet my needs and also care for my community in whatever way I can, and leverage mm-hmm. the little resources I have to not just benefit myself, but to try to address some of the injustices in the world.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love that, you know, it was the first time you had put it that way, of like the individual who talked about hoops and how hoops just make you feel, yes, wonderful and powerful and, you know, in your sauce, basically. And think about, you know, sort of merging, yes. merging that individual power with then, you know, empowering for a community or something. That was a beautiful connection there, which you made. So then what, tell us a little bit about, I guess, like you've touched on the mission, but tell us like how the process works donation wise and some of the organizations that you know choose to donate to.
Sure. So every month, 10% of the proceeds are donated to an organization working towards racial or disability justice. Proceeds mean, I know that's always a little bit murky for people. Proceeds mean before you take any money out for anything else. So 10% of the price of what you're paying is going to one of these organizations. Awesome. Currently, the donations are going to the Loveland Foundation that has a therapy fund for Black women and girls. And it's different every month at this point. And occasionally I'll do like a product that's a higher percentage of proceeds. So right now, okay. The Candace Chunky Hoops, for example, are 50%. Are going to the Loveland Foundation.
Excellent. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So what we had talked about too, with, you know, what made you feel called to do this was sort of this looking at small changes that create a big impact and
right.
being able to take part in social justice in some way. And I think that most Americans went through this experience with after what happened with George Floyd, and sort of this feeling of where do I fit and what can I do? And maybe a sort of wanting to do something, but feeling like maybe there's a lack of something meaningful to really do, especially when it's not close to your own experience, your own identity. You want to be intentional and careful about the way that you then contribute. So, you know, and I loved what you talked about in sort of this small impact and not being maybe paralyzed by the big picture. So, you know, what's sort of your philosophy on that and the way that you look at social justice and how you manage contributing, dando tu granito de arena?
Well, my philosophy is always changing all the time. And I would encourage everyone to be changing their philosophy all the time and, you know, listening to marginalized voices on their own topics. But my philosophy is something is always better than nothing, of course. And I think part of the conversation goes back to what I was talking about in terms of my health, in terms of disability, is that some of the ways to contribute sometimes lack the access for disabled people. So sometimes disabled people have to get a little bit more creative, which I think is the genius of the disability community and the disability justice community or disability justice movement as a whole. But I think that sort of like bred the need to sort of get a little bit more creative with it and not be like, okay, I can't go out and protest, right? My health doesn't allow me to go out and protest. Right. So what can I do? And it won't be nothing because that's not acceptable. Right. And especially as someone who walks through the world as essentially a white woman, you have a responsibility where you have privilege, right? It's our problem that we created and it's our problem that we need to fix. So whatever it is that you can do, whatever it is that you can give, and it doesn't always have to be monetary. It can be time. It can be space. Do you have a space you can rent out for a meeting or something, right? Like any given resource that you have that you can leverage for your community, that's what you have to think that. I think that it's very, very easy for all of us to get very like in the weeds about how big these problems are because they are enormous and they have lasted, you know, years and years and years and years. And there's no end in sight. And so that feels intimidating. Of course, it does.
Debilitating.
Right. But if we all care for each other, everybody will be cared for.
And, you know, I think to say, giving your time, it could be, you know, of course, that could mean volunteering or participating in an event. It could also mean taking some time to educate yourself, taking some time, like you said, to listen to marginalized voices, making sure that that becomes part of your perspective. You know, and I think that's, and that has inspired me personally a lot in this sort of conversation of social justice and where we fit in it. I think that I have some clarity on, for example, for I was an environmental studies major. So I understand that philosophy. It was a real light bulb moment to think about this in the same way that I think about environmental issues or conservation, that I understand environmentally that I don't need to, you know, stop the drilling of the pipeline and, you know, the Keystone pipeline or whatever. Maybe that's not my fight to like chain me to a tree so that it doesn't get cut down. But I know that there's stuff I can do every single day that makes a big impact. You know, and if everybody does these smaller things that are conservation aware, then it would add up to be a big impact. And it's the same conversation for this with social justice. And what Annette and I talked about beforehand too, was that it's the same with anything. It's the same with learning this language, that when you get into it, there's an overwhelming amount that you're going to have to learn. And so the magic of knowing that your small actions do add up and they are progress. You know, it's hard to see progress when it happens day by day, but it is happening, you know, and that's really actually how progress happens.
Yeah. I also think it's so important to remember, because when you get into justice work or even language work, the more you know, the more you're aware you don't know.
Right.
So the farther you get into it, the more overwhelming it becomes because you become aware of all of these little branches of like how these injustices have affected so many people for hundreds of years. Things that you haven't even learned about in school that you should have been learning about in school, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even down to like, you know, it was Martin Luther King Jr. Day the other day, and the way we learn about him and how it's absolutely whitewashed, right?
Right.
So every little step you take, you start learning about all the stuff you don't know,
right?
Which can sometimes lead to burnout. And I would just encourage people that when they're feeling that, to remember where they came from, right? And to remember that they have the power to like affect their community,
right?
and help them take what they already took, right? There's just so much to be done, and it absolutely can be overwhelming, but there's so much left to be hopeful for. And if we create the world that we want, then hopefully it will go on to exist.
Yes. And remembering your why. I mean, I bring this up all the time with the language learning process too. You are going to get overwhelmed in the language learning process. Of course, when you start looking into things like social justice, it could be heartbreaking and very emotionally heavy and overwhelming in that way. But having a really strong and compelling why to come back to and reconnect with, it might be that you need to sort of detach a bit from the content, from the learning process, from being in the weeds, and come back and reflect and reconnect to that why. And that's okay. Sometimes you need to take a little break from it. And that's what I've told students or have talked about on this podcast. When you are feeling overwhelmed, like, take a break and come back to what it is that sparks that flame in you. You know, whether it's that you love music in Spanish, or that, you know, what was it that inspired you and how can you sort of reconnect with that? We're finding new connections, new reasons why, but to continue to inspire yourself so that, you know, from there, actions follow. But it's okay to sort of take shelter and take refuge every once in a while and connect back into the internal why when the external becomes a bit overwhelming.
Right. And so I was saying, and at the same time, on the other side of that, don't stop, right? Like, you don't have permission to stop growing and stop learning. And as someone who really struggled with that, with language, of like letting myself off the hook too much because I was anxious, mm-hmm. because I was scared, because I didn't want to look dumb, because I'm bad at learning in front of people, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I let myself off the hook too much. And I think people do it with social justice as well. It's like, this overwhelms me. This is too emotional, so I'm not engaging with it.
Yeah.
Rather than finding sustainable ways to engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you can look to people already doing the work. Black and Indigenous creators have always been doing the work, right?
Yep. Yep.
And they have been doing it sustainably for years. So right. People have paved the way.
Right.
You are not flying solo and with no blueprint. Mm-hmm. You just have to be listening to someone other than yourself.
Yeah. So true. And there's a million, I mean, it's the same, what I preach over and over again to students, that, you know, the way that you practice will change. And if you get burnt out on one way of practicing, then there's a million other ways that can still right. serve you in your process, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
And it's the same thing. If you're not quite in you're finding your niche in some activity that you're trying to do, you're trying to do it from the good of your heart to really contribute something, but it's not quite clicking. It's okay. There's other ways that are still super, super valid. And the acknowledging with that, you know, we all have unique gifts and unique personality traits that suit really well for different things. And if it's right. not you to go and protest, that's okay. There's another niche that you are so, so good for, you know, that is where your genuine and meaningful contribution can come from.
Yeah.
I think this is a great message to share for that's going to resonate with people in so many ways, in so many layers. And again, talking about sort of the looking at language learning through the scope of being human, and not just acknowledging that there's more to the process than learning how to conjugate verbs. There's a lot of connection, of contribution, of how do I make progress in this language that is very important to acknowledge as well. And that can actually end up being the reason why maybe you get off track, is because of those emotions, you know, that they're so strong, so right. layered. So I thank you so much for sharing, you know, being willing to be vulnerable, sharing your process and talking to what the heart of the issue, which interests me far more than, you know, that the fact that my students, you know, correctly conjugated verbs in the right past tense. So Annette, tell us where we can find Whole Hoops.
You can find Whole Hoops at Whole Hoops on Instagram, or you can shop at wholehoops.com.
Excellent. Is it just like that, wholehoops.com?
Yep.
Fantastic. And on Instagram at wholehoops, no underscores, no silly business?
Yep, correct.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for this very, very good quality conversation. I expected nothing less, and so excited to continue learning with you.
Back at you. Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Absolutely. All right, guys. As always, you can find me on Instagram at Carrie B, KERRYBE _, on TikTok as the same. Check out my website, SpanishWithCarrie.com. And if you have any topics you'd like me to cover in upcoming episodes, please feel free to reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed this conversation, if it resonated with you, please share it. Share it with someone who you know it'll resonate with. Annette, thank you so much.
Thank you.